Hello and welcome back to PaleoCast. My name is Dave Marshall and you're listening to our coverage of the 2025 annual meeting of the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology. So, as an invertebrate paleontologist, you'll all know that this really isn't my thing, but fortunately, we had plenty of the PaleoCast team in attendance. Emily took along our portable recording equipment, and she was joined by Filippo, the interviewee from our last episode, who's actually going to be joining the PaleoCast team, so make sure you extend a very warm welcome to him. Anyway, this year's SVP was hosted in Birmingham, and since the conference only occurs outside of North America once every 4 years, it represented a great opportunity for PaleoCast to attend. In this episode, you'll get to hear from some of the people running the conference, as well as others in attendance, and hopefully it should be able to give you a feel for what being at this event is like, and the kinds of discussions that occur between the hundreds of delegates present. If you enjoy this kind of content, then there are paleontological conferences going on all year that we could attend, so please let us know. And then make sure you also check out our website, under the miscellaneous category, where you can find other similar reports from conferences we've attended in previous years. And if you are getting sick of dinosaurs, as if that would happen, then don't worry, because after our next episode, which is also going to be about dinosaurs, and maybe the one after that as well, but after those, we've got interviews on a whole load of random subjects lined up, so please stay tuned. And until then, I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, Emily.
Hello, Filippo.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm great, actually. How are you getting on?
Here we are at SVP 2025.
Yeah, it's been a great meeting so far. We're on day two. And things have been really interesting.
Indeed, we have seen so many posters and great talks. Sometimes I didn't even watch some of these because I was too busy talking to people.
I know, I've had clashes as well with things that I wanted to look at and go and see. Just the way of the meeting, because there were three concurrent sessions going on at the time.
I was like, yeah, let's go see the Pterosaur Symposium, and I got stuck discussing the future of paleopathology, so... which was a great talk. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, this is SVP. You make plans and they all go to the toilet in a positive way. So.
Speaking of which, I feel terrible that I missed your poster. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I presented my current freelance research on Iguanodon Farm. Here we are in 2025, 200 years, happy birthday Iguanodon. And I think it was the best way to congratulate him for this beautiful achievement, to try to test the old hypothesis that Iguanodon was stabbing predators and even other Iguanodons around. And we calculate the range of motion of the arm and the stress resistance of the thumb of Iguanodon. And, well, I will tell you the result out of record because it's still under work, but let's say that there is something there now, very interesting to publish.
Excellent. I look forward to seeing it published.
Or when we finish the recording,
yes,
and I can
yes,
tell you,
you
more.
Can tell me more about it then.
And what about you?
Oh yeah, I'm not presenting this year, but I've seen some really interesting talks. I mean, of course, one that was very interesting was embargoed on the program, which I've never seen before. I don't know about you, but James Napoli and Lindsay Zano's talk, who unfortunately couldn't be here, so James took both of those talks. I think the room was absolutely packed for those, but that's to do with the recent Nanotyrannus paper. So I think a lot of people were very interested in that one, and it was a good talk.
Indeed, and I was also very surprised to see the huge crowd present at Hadrosaurs, like the Ornithischian Symposium, the Ornithischian session that was in the morning of the first day, where usually the people are not so and so, you know,
get
because
sleepy.
People are coming and sleeping, blah, blah, blah. And yet the room was full, and as a Hadrosaur worker, I was like, yes, this is wonderful. But of course, Yeah, of course. Nothing can beat the T-Rex and Nanotyrannus.
Yeah, the T-Rex Power Hour. You've got to have it at SVP.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to bring on the revolution of the Ornithischians, but we are still crashing against the wall of T-Rex. So what's your take so far of SVP? I mean, I know this is a kind of obvious question, but this is an SVP that is actually not in the US, but it's in England. So you've been to the US recently for your PhD. What's the main difference between a UK SVP and a US SVP?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, really.
I don't even know if there are differences, because it's such a crazy experience every time.
Yes, it is. It's very overwhelming, but good, I think, is what I would say. Differences.
I can say one.
Yes, please do.
We are not in a venue that has a hotel.
Yes.
Together with the conference venue. So it's crazy, because now Birmingham is full of paleontologists that are walking around the city like at 11 o'clock in the night. And you see people and, these are the people from the meeting. And we paleontologists have conquered Birmingham.
Absolutely. Yes. I think, there have been a few differences in organization. The venue is very interesting. It's over a couple of floors. So getting to talks has been a little bit difficult if you're trying to go from one floor to the next to get to the hall that it's in. But that's just logistical. It's going to be different every year, depending on where we are. There's a lot more European people here, I think, this year as well, which is really nice.
I was very happy to see people from Germany, people from Spain, from Italy. I wasn't expecting these, actually, relatively many people from Italy, and also quite some Asian people. I was surprised to see that.
It's a great mix this year, I think, of people.
Yeah, indeed. And so, what are your goals for the next days SVP?
I'll have to get my spreadsheet out and take a look, but definitely the Triassic talks. I'm going to be in a lot of those.
Of course you are.
So I'm looking forward to those. There were a good couple this morning, actually, on phytosaurs and aegisaurs. Interestingly, in the Mesozoic Seas and Skies session, which neither of those are found in the Mesozoic Seas or Skies, but more rivers, terrestrial, and then fully terrestrial.
Hey, you have a session, skies and seas, and you can put a midline.
The bit between, the bit between.
One final question, because I've seen this discussed also on the social media by the SVP. You're now, congratulations on finishing your PhD, first of all. So you're a bit of a seasoned paleontologist. What could be your advice to undergrad or master students approaching a big event like SVP for the first time?
I think a great thing to do is to try and talk to a lot of people. There's a lot of excellent people to talk to here and all different career stages. So you can really get some great information if you're looking to go on to grad school, for example. You can look for advisors, or you can talk to grad students who are going through it at the moment and find out a lot about what you might expect. If you're looking for jobs, there's, of course, people that you can talk to there, hopefully. More or less. I think it's great to make friends, network, and just talk to as many people as possible. That would probably be my advice. Do you have any advice?
I have advice, but for the professors and the major people, invite students to lunch.
Yes.
There's no better time to discuss about academia, research, possibilities, other than a nice meal.
Yes.
I think that's the best time.
Yeah.
However, we have been talking so much between each other, but I'm pretty sure that the people wants to know more about the actual people involved around the meeting. So what about if we go around and search for people?
I think we go and search for people to talk to, and we will bring you some interviews with them throughout the conference.
So let's go?
Yeah, let's go.
Sure. Okay, so SVP 2025, please introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Margaret. I'm from a company called 10 Tons, and I'm here with Abdi, and we are representing some of our models that we've been making for this exhibition. But normally we make reconstructions for natural history museums.
Yeah, it's indeed quite interesting what you have done. So can we walk through us among what you have here?
Yes. Well, we have two different projects shown here at the table. What you mostly see is the food section, which is about an exhibition we call Time Traveler's Guide to Gastronomy, which is a way how to explain evolution through gastronomy. So for instance, if you go to the Cambrian period, what kind of food could be served at that time? It would be seafood, not be able to have a beer because there wouldn't be any grass. So it's a way to grasp the whole story about evolution in a funny way. So yeah, and what we've noticed so far is that people actually find it quite funny. Yeah. How it would have tasted.
So for the people hearing the podcast, try to imagine a round table with ice era in the middle, with ice to try to keep the freshness yes. of the ingredients. And we see the head of a T-Rex, the leg of a pteropod, I think.
Or a
Nanosaurus. Nanosaurus. Sections of ichthyosaurs, like a swordfish, a giant mollusk that you can do as a barbecue or whatever, and a poor plesiosaur that just hanging down like a shark. And I see also Dankleosteus. That is actually a fantastic idea to bring more people into, you know, science through a little of engagement.
Yes.
Speaking about engagement, how's your first impression of SVP? How did you like it so far?
Well, we've mostly been here behind our stand, and it's been quite a success. We were tilted over by people yesterday who came here. We're running out of papers to hand out. So far it's been a great success. People are super nice, super interested. So we're happy about it.
Is this your first participation attendance in scientific meetings? Or do you already have some experience with that?
For Abdi and I, we are beginners at the SVP, but for 10 tons, we've been there quite some times. We were also in Minneapolis last year, where they received a prize for making a Nanosaurus. So we are, as a company, familiar with it, but Abdi and I are newbies.
And how have you found the reaction of people? Since you are newbies, sorry for the newbie word, but since you are newbies, what is the general view of people? I understand that it attracts even jokes and stuff, but it also indicates how people really wants to bring science to the general audience in a while. So what's the usual, what's the common message, common opinion that you get from the people here, that
We have gotten many, and it opens up for many discussions that people talked about, where they go into detail about our models, especially these, for instance, here we're looking at Archaeopteryx that's laying here, and people start to laugh in the beginning and then start to discuss, okay, how would the chest look and all those things. It looks really realistic, but it kind of like kickstarts a debate. And then another thing that we knew that would be mentioned is for that exhibition we should have some more vegetables,
yeah,
when possible. But of course, when this is brand new and just in the run-up, so the first thing everybody did was of course start to find one of your favorite dinosaurs and make it into a plate of meat. So that's why that's not so much of it. We have made after we sent this a trilobite dish where there was like kelp as part of it. So we're focusing on that part for the vegetarian as well. Yeah.
Speaking about the future, is there any new ideas that you can reveal, that if you can reveal, for possible future iteration for 10 tons?
This is the new thing that we started with talking about. But we also have another exhibition called Rock Fossils on Tour, which is based on the fact that a lot of paleontologists like to listen to heavy metal music. And therefore we created a touring exhibition that's called Rock Fossils on Tour, where you can go and see fossils that's been named after different idols. It's traveling, and in 2027 we're gonna make a bigger version.
Okay.
That's why we also brought this. Lemmisuchus crocodile, named after Lemmy from Motorhead, which will be part of the new exhibition. Full size, of course. This is a small version. So, the new stuff is the Time Traveler's Guide to Gastronomy. But in general, we make stuff for Natural History Museum, working with science people, how to make an accurate model for them.
Thank you very much. This has been enlightening. So, as a last question.
Yes.
If you would design your own plate from your own favorite prehistoric animal, how that would be?
Oh, I haven't actually... That's weird. I haven't thought about it. Then maybe I should mention. I'm going to show you the backside of this, which you can't hear and see in your podcast, of course. This is our team members. We have 5 members. And I'm working in the office. My background is architect.
Okay.
So I have this whole nerdy part about paleontology is just growing slowly on me, but I can't pick and point. I think there's so many great and interesting animals. I think this chicken Artiodactylus is pretty cool as a model. So maybe I look at it more like that.
And of course, it will taste like
chicken.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
First of all, let's introduce yourself. Let's start from you, Jake.
Okay, I'm Dr. Jake Adderby. Long-time Paleocast listeners will remember me from such past episodes as video games in paleontology and the Paleocast Gaming Network and things of that nature, but also fossil fish, which is what I mainly work on. And now I work at the Lapworth Museum of Geology, so I'm sat behind a table covered in mugs and coasters and books from our little gift shop. And I'm joined next to me by Molly Pack. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Molly. I'm an illustrator. I'm currently studying my master's for illustration, and I specialise in paleo art. And I currently work with the museum as an artist in residence.
Is this some of your art that's hanging up around us? Like, there's a lot of skulls of dinosaurs. It's all very beautiful.
Not at the moment, no. Okay. But yeah, whose work is this?
This is a work by an artist, a local artist called Ian Jackson. And Ian, he does this really cool thing where he kind of presses the ink. It's very soothing watching him do it. So a lot of this artwork, it's not very scientifically accurate. It's quite stylized, but it's very, very pretty. And I think the way that we have the gift shop set up at the moment, we have a little area called the Artisan Corner. And every few months, we get a new artist in doing some kind of artwork related to natural history or science.
Yes, it was really great seeing the museum and the gift shop yesterday at the Icebreaker event. We had a lot of fun there. Could you tell us a bit about the museum?
Yeah, so with the Lapworth Museum of Geology, we are one of the oldest and definitely the biggest museum of geology in the Midlands. And our museum specializes primarily in the Wenlock Limestone. This is a local rock feature for us, which contains fossils of trilobites and crinoids and brachiopods. Basically, Birmingham used to be a coral reef back in the day, so we've got all the bits of that. But the museum also has minerals and a big owl replica, and we're very, very proud of our collections. We also host a lot of unusual events for a museum. So we have movie nights, we have bands playing. So in a few weeks, we've got a David Bowie tribute band playing underneath our pterosaur skeleton,
awesome.
Which will be very, very fun.
That's fantastic. And do you have a favorite exhibit as part of that museum? Both of you, either you?
Yeah, my favorite exhibit, I love in the back corner of the museum, we've got some footprints that were found in Shropshire, and they're really, really cool. Because we don't fully know what made them, but we just know it was very big with a big sprawling gait, which I'm now miming, which you can't see, but I promise it's very good.
Yeah, mine is the Cetiosaurus leg bone, also at the back of the museum, which was found in Gloucester, which is a particular... what's the word? Oh my gosh, I've gone blank. It's a particular interest of mine because I study in Gloucestershire. I'm currently doing a little bit of a research project on the fossils found in that area, and I'm illustrating a book at the moment based on that.
That sounds awesome. Will that be out anytime soon? Can we expect that on shelves?
Maybe. I'm self-publishing, but it comes out on December 10th.
Awesome. That's really soon. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Were you able to see any presentations so far or any posters so far?
I have not seen any presentations so far, but I heard that Dr. Lisa Schnetz's poster about jawless fish, about Doryaspis, was really, really good, and that's actually inspired a new exhibit in the museum all about how jawless fish eat and the strange ways in which they live. So her presentation was, I have heard, was very, very, very good.
And what has been the reaction to your exhibit? Have people been really into it and asking you lots of questions and things?
The new exhibition about jawless fish. People have been really into it. We've had a lot of praise from fish people and even from non-fish people, which is always great because people look down on fossil fish as kind of the runts of the vertebrate paleo world. So it's been really nice seeing the reaction to it, definitely, especially considering how much hours of work we put into it.
Yesterday we had the icebreaking party at the museum. How was your impression, especially of people around? Because one of the first doubts I had when I heard about SVP in Birmingham was where to put all these people. And of course it was a difficult thing to manage. So how was the feeling that you had yesterday about these thousands of paleontologists roaming around the university and the museum itself?
For us it was really nice. We have a lot of events in our museum where people aren't very used to being in museums, so often leave the place a bit of a mess. But SVP delegates, they understood how precious it was. They actually were very respectful. And they kept the gift shop open all night. They were very, very generous as well. That's all I know. I love these conferences because I know so many people here, so I was constantly just being grabbed and talked to. So I wasn't really there much for when the museum was kind of invaded by people, but I've never seen it so busy, and I've never seen it so, as you say, full of scientists who knew everything about what was in there. There was even, we have a replica of Big Al, there was even someone who was on the original Big Al dig team looking at that skeleton, and he was telling us how good of a replica it was, which blew my mind. I never thought that was going to happen. So yeah, very, very fun audience for us, definitely.
So as a last question, what's in the future for the Lap Wharf together with all the SciComing events that you have? What you can tell us?
What can I tell you about the future of Lapworth Museum? So my job at the museum is community development and outreach. So I'm trying to continue building links with the local Birmingham community. We're building links with the Refugee and Migrant Centre, with the LGBTQ Centre very soon as well. It's just about sort of making the museum feel like a really core place in the city where anyone is welcome. And then on a bigger scale, we're going to continue making these huge high impact exhibitions about this new research, about fish or anything else that's going on in our department, and just continue to showcase the brilliant things that the scientists in Birmingham are coming up with.
Okay, thank you very much, and have a nice continuation of the meeting.
No worries, thank you so much, see you in a bit.
Hi, Helen. Could you please introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what your research is on?
Hi, my name is Helen Birch, and I am a PhD student working with Sterling Nesbitt, and I research paleoecology for Triassic reptiles, and I'm working on building trophic networks.
Excellent. So you're actually an award winner here at SVP with the Patterson Student Fieldwork Grant. How did it feel when you found out that you got that grant?
It was really, really exciting because I was actually at one of the study sites doing some kind of preliminary overview about learning about the area when I found out that I received the grant, which was really great because I'd like to be able to continue going there in order to further collect fossils to make my project dreams come true.
Excellent. And whereabouts is that site?
So I'm working at a few sites in the Fundy Basin, which is in Nova Scotia. And these are late Triassic and earliest Jurassic sites.
Awesome. And as you said, you've been there before. What was the experience of doing fieldwork in this location like?
It was very different from what I'm used to doing fieldwork in the Southwest U.S. Because it's all very hard sandstones, and it's not these accumulated microsites so much. So a lot of prospecting, walking up and down the beach, trying to time things right with the tides, because of course the Fundy Bay has the largest daily tides in the world, and so the amount of time that you have to do field work and when you can do that field work is very much governed by their motion.
You gave a great presentation yesterday.
Oh, thank you.
Can you talk a bit about that without revealing anything that needs to stay secret, of course?
Mm-hmm. Basically, the gist of it is that a lot of biotic or a lot of functional diversity as well as taxonomic diversity is held at lower size classes. So a lot of what I am working on now is making it so that we can include microfossils, which are primarily teeth, in analyses of functional diversity. Because without that, we're getting a very incomplete picture of what some of these awesome Mesozoic communities really look like.
And I expect you've been doing a bit of networking while you've been here. And this final question, what advice would you give other students, especially those at their first SVP, when they're trying to talk to people?
Oh, I would say just do it. I was very scared at my first SVP, and I didn't talk to very many people. But as the years go on, it gets much, much easier. And if you are excited about someone's research and you saw a talk that inspired you, you should go up and tell that person because they will appreciate it and they'll probably want to hear about what you're interested in. And it's always great to talk to friendly paleontologists from around the globe.
Thank you, Helen. It's been great talking to you.
It's been great talking to you too, Emily.
Hi, so it's great to see you, Phil. Could you introduce yourself quickly to the paleocast?
Phil Curry, the University of Alberta in Canada, and I work on dinosaurs, and particularly dinosaurs from either Alberta, Canada, or from Mongolia.
That's awesome. And you're quite a veteran of SVP.
Oh, yes.
how has this meeting been?
Surprisingly good. I mean, surprising in the sense of not the quality of the talks and so on. That's good anyway. But surprising in the sense that we only really started having international meetings a short time ago. So it's every 5 years or so. And you're never sure just how many people are going to show up. And so the size of this meeting is absolutely amazing. People have come from all over the world, essentially, to attend. And the number of talks is excellent. I'd say it's one of the best meetings in recent years.
Yeah. You're not presenting, are you?
No, I've reached the stage of my career where I decided that it's probably better for students to make the presentations.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you have any students who are presenting?
Yeah, well, I've got something like five of the students are actually presenting. Yesterday did present, most of them.
Right.
So, yeah.
How did that go? Did you see their talks and enjoy them?
Oh, I went to all their talks. I missed some of the posters because that's maybe the one criticism is it's hard to find some of the posters.
It is a little bit. They're sort of all spread out all over the venue, so it can be a little tricky to find the one that you want to see.
Yeah.
But they've all been very good quality, I think, that I've seen.
I think so too.
Has anyone in particular stood out to you in terms of talks?
Well, of course, being a theropod expert, I'd say the theropod talks have all stood out. And James Napoli's two talks on Nanotyrannus and the new specimen were something I was really looking forward to seeing. And so for me, they stood out. But the other Tyrannosaur talks in the Tyrannosaur Power Hour, that was also pretty exceptional, just going from one Tyrannosaur to another. And some of them were from Alberta, some from Mongolia, and some from other parts of the world. So they were the best ones by far. Greg Funston's talk on canid gnathids, this little new one that's come up, that was also pretty exciting. I shouldn't say that because actually I'm a co-author on that one too. But it was nice to see how far he's taken it and what he's been able to glean from that little specimen.
Excellent.
What is your idea for the future of paleontology? Watching so many students and the rising quality of poster and presentation and even more networking connection between different people of different countries and different tradition and culture and so on and so forth. In relation, for example, when you started as a student.
When I started, my first SVP, I think, was maybe 200 people. What was it? Toronto, actually, back in 1972 or thereabouts. It was a while ago. Wow. And, of course, the nice thing about a small conference is you get to really meet all of the icons in paleontology. So Romer was there, and Colbert, and you name it, anybody who worked in paleontology at that time. But it was actually most of the paleontologists in North America who worked on vertebrate paleontology, and that was kind of exciting. But it's so good to see that the field has grown so much over the years. And this is what we certainly wanted to see happen, because when I started off, there were probably only half a dozen jobs in the world where people got paid to do research on dinosaurs. And so my chances of getting a job were just about nil.
I know how that feels.
Yeah. And but now there's certainly well over 150 positions worldwide where people can get jobs in dinosaur paleontology and be paid to do what they love doing. And I think that's pretty exciting. And people think, how much higher can it get? How much better can it get? But the number of paleontologists is still not all that much. And when you look at where all the money is being spent in science, and yet who has the greatest influence on recruiting people into science, there's certainly a lot more room in there for museums and universities to take on vertebrate paleontologists. And I think that we haven't seen the top yet. So I think it's going to continue to grow for at least the foreseeable future. And I think there will be positions for people looking for jobs.
As a last question, since you are a successful professor with many students all over the years, I would like to ask you two things. What is your advice to students approaching SVP for the first time? And what is your suggestion to young professors having their first students at SVP, how they should interact with them?
Well, I've always believed that you do have to let the students have their run. That is, their creativity is one of the things that keeps a professor going and keeps you young. Sometimes you're a little bit jaded about it, and you say, no, you know, you got to do it this way. But the reality is that new ideas are coming up all the time, and there's new ways of approaching things, and things that you think may be not the way to do it at first turn out to be bang on, and you end up with new ways of looking at things and new things to test.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Phil. It was a pleasure.
You're very welcome.
So, hi, Richard. It's fantastic to talk to you. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are?
Yeah, so I'm Richard Butler. I'm a professor of paleobiology at the University of Birmingham. I've been in Birmingham about 12 years or so now, but my PhD many years ago was at Cambridge on early dinosaur evolution, and I've mostly been working on kind of early Mesozoic vertebrates since then, and I've worked in London at the Natural History Museum, in Munich, and then in Birmingham for the last decade or so.
Awesome. So you are actually organising this meeting this year, and how has that experience been of organising it?
Yeah, so I'm co-chair of the host committee and doing a lot of the work around organisation. It's an interesting experience. So it's quite different. I have organised conferences before. This is a bit different in that SVP is a very large organisation. It has a business office. They take on quite a bit of organisation, so I haven't had to deal with the venue at all or anything. There's a programme committee that deals with the programme. So we have quite a defined set of responsibilities around things like the evening events, the field trips, the merchandise, logos, all of that kind of stuff. It has been quite intense, but just also incredibly rewarding to have all of the world's vertebrate paleontologists, or many of the world's vertebrate paleontologists here in Birmingham. And you know, we're getting a lot out of it as well.
Fantastic. Is there anything different about this SVP? Obviously, it's outside of North America. Have there been any hurdles with that at all?
I I think, well, I guess the big difference is it's not in North America, absolutely. So that means that I think the composition of people that are here is quite different. So it's much less North American dominated in terms of the, you know, we've got a very large British and continental Europe contingent. We've also got quite a lot of people here from China and India, probably more than you would have a normal SVP. So I think the distribution of speakers and presenters is a bit different from normal. I don't think it's created major challenges running outside of North America, apart from we don't have an auction, and so SVP made the decision that logistically and for tax reasons it was too difficult to do that. So again, that's a bit different from what you would normally have on a Friday night at SVP. But we, you know, we put together alternative events to fill in some of the gaps, like the absence of an auction.
Yes, I heard a lot of people had a great time last night despite the absence of the auction. Lots of great meals out and things like that. So just in general, how has your SVP been so far, and is it what you hoped it would be?
It's been a bit frantic. I'm kind of, you know, at the end of the, close to the end of the meeting now, so calming down. We don't have many responsibilities left as host committee now. But, I mean, it's been amazing. It is just an incredible privilege to have all, you know, so many of the world's vertebrate paleontologists visit us here in Birmingham. So I think we've really enjoyed it. It's been a bit stressful at times, but I mean, it's been amazing.
Yeah, I can imagine it's a little bit stressful, but I've had a great time. Everyone I've spoken to is having a fantastic time. So I think you've done really, really well organizing it this year. Going a bit more specific about what's been going on, have you seen any good talks, and has anyone stood out to you, without spoiling anything from their talks, of course?
I haven't actually been able to see many talks.
Oh, no.
Until, yeah, I guess today, we're with Saturday today. Today I'm hoping to see more talks, but it's been quite challenging because I've been just running around doing things most of the meeting. So I did sit through quite a bit of the Triassic session yesterday. Really enjoyed lots of the talks in that. I don't really want to pull out any out specifically, but that was a very engaging session. I really enjoyed that. But yeah, it's been a bit challenging to see too many presentations.
Yeah, I was in the Triassic session yesterday as well. I thought it was great. There were lots of fantastic talks in that session, so I can see it's very difficult to pull one out in particular. But you actually gave a great talk the other day on new specimens from the Isle of Skye. It looked like a really interesting place to work. And could you talk a little bit about field work on there and what that's like?
Yeah, so we've got a long-term field work project, and we've been running it for about a decade or more, together with the American Museum of Natural History and National Museum of Scotland. And we're working on the southern coast of Skye on a peninsula called Strathead Peninsula. And we have these amazing Middle Jurassic fossils coming from a small section of outcrops, just a couple of hundred meters of outcrops along the coast there. It is a stunningly beautiful place to work. So we have this amazing view over the Cullen Mountains, very distinctive mountain range. But it is quite a hard place to work as well. So it's sort of semi-remote. When the weather's nice, it's beautiful. The weather's very often not nice. So we have a lot of rain. We have high winds. We're kind of walking, carrying very heavy rocks and machinery. You know, we use rock saws and stuff in the field along these very steep, treacherous coastal paths in terrible weather. So it's quite a hard place to work, but extremely rewarding in terms of the fossils we're getting out of there.
Awesome. Is it difficult getting equipment and things out there at all? Or is that okay? Because there's ferries, I assume, that go there.
Well, Skye, there's a bridge that goes over to Skye, actually. Oh. So it's very straightforward to drive there. So we drive up from here. It's a very long drive. So it takes about 12 hours to get from Birmingham to Skye. So the roads become very slow once you get kind of deeper into Scotland. It's pretty easy to get there. It's just when you're actually there, it's getting out to the outcrops themselves is where the challenge comes in.
Yeah, and you spoke about some new material. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask exactly what it is. But what are some of the challenges of working with material from Skye?
So it's quite an unusual locality. So very small outcrops. The entire outcrop of the Kilmaluag Formation that we're working on there is just a couple of hundred metres on the foreshore. And the fossils are very, very small. And they are preserved in these very hard, resistant carbonates. So we spend a lot of time crawling around in the rain on our hands and knees looking for fossils to start with. But then because of the nature of the sediment, we have to cut them out with rock saws. It's very difficult to extract them using any other approach. And then the fossils can't be readily prepared. So they're not suitable for physical or chemical preparation, really. It's very slow. And also you lose the association of these remarkable three-dimensionally preserved associated small vertebrate skeletons if you were to kind of, you know, try and physically prepare them out. So we have to use CT scanning and synchrotron scanning to virtually prepare the fossils. So we virtually remove the rock from around them. And when we do that, we get these amazing, often pretty complete, articulated, three-dimensional, middle Jurassic, small vertebrate fossils, mammals, salamanders, charistodeers, lepidosaurs, all of those sorts of things.
Fantastic. And I just have one last question, so we don't want to keep you too long. But do you have any advice for students or even professors at this conference about things they should do, people they should talk to, that sort of thing?
Well, I guess this is you know, one of the main reasons to go to a conference like this is to meet people, right? And to see who else is, you know, what other people are doing within the research field. So I think just take that opportunity to speak to as many people as possible, introduce yourself, get yourself out there, and you know, explore what the possibilities might be for yourself in the future.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for talking to us. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation to talk to you today.
Hi, my name is Stuart Sumita, and I'm a professor of biology at the California State University in San Bernardino, but I'm also the president of the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology.
How's your first impression of this year SVP?
We're very excited about this year's SVP, which is in Birmingham, England. SVP used to be an exclusively North American group. It's no longer the case. It's very much an international group. We have members from over 50 countries working on every continent in the world, including Antarctica. And having a meeting here in the United Kingdom has been really, really fortuitous for us because in addition to drawing our sort of traditional audience, we're also getting a lot of people from the United Kingdom, from Europe, from Africa, Asia, all over the world, because the United Kingdom is very much a crossroads for many, many people. And we've had tremendous attendance, and so far the meeting's been going great.
You actually predict my next question. How is this different from previous years?
Well, in previous years, we've had a couple of things to consider. One, the last few meetings we've had were in North America, and it is nice to be outside of North America now. And this is the biggest meeting we've had since the pandemic. There was an extreme sort of drop in scientific society activities worldwide, not just us, but worldwide, because of the pandemic. And because of the pandemic, with very little travel, you didn't have this opportunity for in-person collaboration. Lots of things went virtual, and the technology of virtual meeting increased tremendously, but it took away the opportunity for those serendipitous interactions that only come when you actually see a person face-to-face. And this has been the biggest face-to-face meeting that we've had in over a decade. And that's very, very exciting. And we have a hugely diverse international representation.
That is actually one of the points I wanted to underline, because I saw the representation of the LGBTQ plus people, the BIPOC people, many different groups. And so where does stand SVP right now towards the different communities, given also the difficult modern situation?
That's a great question. One of the things that the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology has traditionally been well known for is the way we embrace a diversity of groups. And I'm very pleased to say that in the time I've been a member, we've seen an incredible increase in that diversity. When I first joined, it was still a predominantly male, predominantly white, Caucasian, male-dominated society. There were a few minorities, but very few. Since then, our membership is very close to being majority female. And we have people of diverse backgrounds, both ethnically and in terms of their lifestyle choices, than we ever had before. Now, interestingly, I've known a number of people of a variety of lifestyle choices, and they've told me that they've always felt that SVP was a place where they could feel very, very comfortable about it. And I know a lot of people who will tell you, well, I don't care. I'm blind to these differences. One of the things about SVP is we're not blind to it. We embrace it because the thing we care about most is that we all love paleontology. And so I'm more concerned with your love of paleontology than your other choices. Not that I don't respect them, but that's the foot in the door, the gateway to understanding of different lifestyles. And I think SVP has been an excellent sort of model for other groups. We have, for example, heard from other groups asking us to counsel and advise them on how to embrace and address a diversity of groups and how to consider our ethics policies.
That is incredible. And how are you predicting SVP to even evolve better towards the protection and the recognition of other communities? What can SVP do more than today?
One of the things that SVP is working very, very hard at is to not only embrace a diversity of groups, but also to protect them. You can't see this on my podcast voice right now, but one of the things you will see around is this, where you see people wearing a badge that says Safe SVP. That is our pledge.
I'll take one.
That is our pledge to remain sensitive to the issues and security of anybody who feels like they need protection or need to be safe. One of our policies is that we always meet in a venue where we know our members will be safe. And that takes a variety of forms. In terms of acceptance. We've been asked, for example, to meet in certain Middle Eastern countries where gender choice is illegal. So we don't meet there because it's inappropriate for our membership. There are some states in the United States, I won't start talking politics now, but there are some states in the United States in which women's rights for healthcare are under attack. We can't meet in those places because if a member of our society becomes ill, that person must be able to access emergency health care. We cannot go somewhere where all of our members aren't safe. And that is a policy that we have advocated and discussed with other leaders of other societies to try and make sure that we aren't the only ones who are doing that.
That is very honorable by our association.
Now, I have to give credit where credit's due. I am the president currently, but those policies were not mine or my own. They were initiated by a number of our previous presidents, including Emily Rayfield, Jessica Theodore, and Margaret Lewis, and embraced by myself and future officers like Christy Curry Rogers.
So, coming back to the meeting, we have seen actually great standard for poster and talks. Anyone that you want to remark, someone that you really like to watch, to read, to hear from?
Oh, goodness.
If you were able to follow any of them, of course.
One of the things that happens when you are a member of the executive committee, the leadership of the meeting, is that you wind up doing so much work during the meeting, you don't always get to see so many presentations. But one of the things I love about our meeting is, as I said before, the diversity of our membership. At the banquet, you will hear people being honored with awards. The highest award we have this year, and every year, is called the Romer Simpson Medal, and this year's winner is Michael Benton, who is an icon in the field.
Yeah.
But at this very same meeting, one of the most exciting papers I heard was a young lady who's still a graduate student and she's helping to tease apart the interrelationships of some of the earliest members of the group that we call the synapses, the lineage leading to mammals. So at the same venue, we have young people who are getting the opportunity to take their first steps side by side with some of the most famous people, not only in paleontology, but in all of evolutionary biology. So that's extremely exciting to me. And the other thing that's great, or another thing that's great, not the only thing, okay, is that if you look at the vendors that are here, we are one of the few scientific societies that embraces artists. Paleontological art and scientific art is a huge component of communication. And paleontology in general, invertebrate paleontology specifically, one of the great outlets for exciting scientific art. And that is one of the things that you also see at an event like ours.
Great. And you talk about how big it is. So how's the experience of organizing such a big event?
So, you know, big is a relative term, yeah? I can tell you that the first SVP meeting I ever went to many, many, many years ago was in a small city known as Rapid City, South Dakota. And there were fewer than 300 members in attendance. We have well over 1,000 people attending now. Now, that seems like a lot. But if you consider something like, for example, the neuroscience meetings, you have tens of thousands of people. I have been on panels at Comic-Con where you have 30 to 50,000 people. So we seem big, but we're relatively large, right? Now, it is large for us because we are an entirely volunteer society. We don't have a team that we pay. We all work hard together to pull this off. We do have a business office, and we engage them because the meeting doesn't cost nothing, okay? And they are great at coordinating. Our business office crew is amazing, okay? If I do say so myself. That being said, because we're a volunteer society, we're very much engaged. We don't just show up and have someone else do the work for us. But that makes this society very, very unique in that everybody's invested in its success. People don't just show up and say, entertain me. Everybody cooperates for a successful meeting, which means that despite the fact that we're not gigantic and we're not tiny, a Society of Vertebrate Paleontology meeting is one of the most sort of family-feeling meetings you'll ever go to. You don't see people who are competing with one another. You see people who are interested in one another, and it's really, really pleasant to see and feel.
And this brings me to the last question. First of all, thank you for this wonderful discussion. So, we have had many students, many newbies even, freshly arrived to paleontology. What is, or what are, your advices to, one, young people that arrives to SVP, but also to young professors that start to have their first students arriving here?
So one of the things that happens is people worry about the lack of availability of jobs in the field. It is true that academic jobs, especially jobs in paleontology, are becoming more and more rare. But one of the great strengths of paleontology is it is a what the pedagogical strategists like to call a cross-cutting science. It spans multiple disciplines. It's an earth science. It's a life science. It's an education and outreach science. It is all those kinds of things. Okay? And that means that if you do paleontology, you are prepared to go in many directions. So one of the things I tell people is you need to be willing to be nimble. Okay? Example, more vertebrate paleontologists teach in medical, dental, and nursing schools than any other kind of scientist, at least in North America. When I got my start, I taught in a medical school. Okay. I still occasionally do guest lectures in medical schools because we love anatomy and science, okay? Paleontologists can work in geology, they can work in biology. They don't have to work strictly in academics like museums and universities. They work in mitigation. They work at companies that are doing environmental impact reports because they understand the earth. Okay? They have climate scientists, okay? And so many different things. And my great recommendation is that you remain with your eyes wide open. Always consider that there may be multiple things that you could do. Don't choose to do something and narrow yourself. Do something and let it open up your eyes to many, many opportunities. That being said, there are things that paleontologists are really good at. The example I gave is teaching in the health sciences. The health sciences are never going to go away. They're not something you can send to another country to be done. Okay? People will always need physicians, doctors, dentists, physical therapists, nurses, and so on. And so if you can embrace both the biological as well as geological components, that gives you that even greater opportunity. And so if you consider the broad opportunities that a cross-cutting science provides to you, all the better.
Stuart, thank you very much. This has been enlightening, and I wish you the best for the rest of the meeting.
Thank you for your interest. We're really happy that you're here, and we look forward to you helping us to spread the word that vertebrate paleontology is one of the most exciting and vibrant of sciences.
We surely do.
Okay, thank you.
Paleocast was brought to you by Dave Marshall, with Liz Martin-Silverstone, Tom Fletcher, Nick Lupscher, Emily Keeble, and Sophie Pollard. Music was composed by Patrick Kendall-Smith. Paleocast was made possible by funding from the Paleontological Society and the Paleontological Association. But the show now relies on funding from you, our listeners. So, if you've liked this episode, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where you'll gain access to additional multimedia content. And thanks to everyone who's helped out so far. Please visit paleocast.com for the supplementary material to this episode and for our archive of past programs. And follow us across social media platforms to get all the latest news. Finally, if you enjoy our podcast, please explore all of our video content on YouTube and follow our other projects, the Virtual Natural History Museum and the Paleocast Gaming Network.